All right, we're back. This is P with All Matters, 770 KTTH and Car Radio 97.3 FM. Glad you guys are all listening on this Saturday afternoon here. We're having a great discussion with Craig Nordberg. He's the founder of Norbury Tile. Craig, when did you start your business? How many years ago was it? Was it during the Mesozoic period?
It feels like it. Yeah. It was 1997.
Wow. So you've been at this for a long, long time.
I did go back to New York was there for 4 years before that.
Okay.
And that's where I really cut my teeth in the industry.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, plus you've been all over the world, too, chasing tile. You should actually do a TV show on that.
Oh, that might be kind of fun.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. You'd be on the History Channel, man.
Me and David.
I know executive producer for the History Channel. Maybe we'll get you hooked up.
So. Okay, please.
All right. Okay, please. Well, if you come famous, you'll have more work than you have to do with.
There you go.
All right. So we left last segment talking about functional requirements because, you know how it is. It's kind of you're a consultant and also a designer. It's always about form, fit, and function, right? We talked about the architectural aspect of form and things like that. But as far as function, what are some tips that you can give to clients of like the selection of materials and what is appropriate for different types of applications?
Okay. A kitchen, for example, if you were to use a tile countertop in an area, you're going to want to support it with something more utilitarian, like a butcher block area.
Okay.
And marble is such a great countertop, especially the white marbles, which are more dense.
Okay. So it's not, I always think of marble as being kind of soft, but it's not.
The white ones are not that soft at all. In fact, the greens and the whites are
some of the
densest. How do
they stack up to like a hardness? Because I know, we always go by Brunel hardness, like on granite, but you don't have to give me the Brunel number, but like, how do they stack up to granite, like a white marble?
If I memorize my own numbers, like a granite's probably got to be a nine,
yeah.
for example. The marbles are certainly dense. They're going to come down to, though, probably a six or eight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then a limestone, six.
Okay. And are they, like, if you used marble on a countertop, are they heat resistant?
They are.
Okay.
I wouldn't put a hot pan on it, but if you're a candy maker, you would pour your molten sugar on top of the marble because it pulls the heat out of it. So
you know,
quickly.
That's actually, I forgot that because a lot of candy makers use marble, mm-hmm. you know, when they're making their taffy or whatever they're making.
Yeah, and you're going to see.
So the heat transfer rate is pretty good with the marble.
It is. It's pulling the heat out more rapidly than anything. So it's going to be a big block, but it really doesn't stain.
Okay.
And that's from the density.
Wow. Okay.
Now, the counter to it, though, is I wouldn't put a sugary, crystalline marble in a spa or steam room because those they do kind of dissolve in that regard.
Okay.
So we would consider sugaries. Like a Thassos is that pure white marble that you see.
Okay. Is marble, I mean, compared to, so, you know, you look at like, countertops, you look at engineered quartz, the quartzite stuff, you can't put heat on that because there's a resins in there and that's bad. Granite can take the heat, but granite's porous and you got to seal it. So is marble like granite where it's porous and you have to seal it?
I would seal it, but it's really the one that, the marbles are great.
Okay.
The granites, you really don't need to seal. The quartzite, there's a natural quartzite.
Okay. And that is not an engineered one.
It's not an engineered quartzite.
Okay.
But the issue with a quartzite is that the crystals can get really big. And when the crystals are big, there's fissures in and around those
crystals. So you have those micro cracks.
So, right. You're going to have bigger, thicker cracks that'll absorb.
Okay. Got it.
But it is really very dense, and that again is up there as one of the densest stones.
Okay, so pretty heavy. But you got to structurally support all that too.
You do, and then you got to support it.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, what about, because you brought up off the air, you brought up, I think you brought up limestone and sandstone. So, like, mm-hmm. where should you stay away from using those, and where are they supposed to be or could be used?
Limestones, gosh, they're so beautiful. Those do need to be sealed.
Okay.
The problem is simply water. Water marks get on them.
Yeah.
And we can fix those with another penetrating sealer and poultice if it stains and we need to pull a stain out.
Okay. Is that what the poultice does?
A poultice is real thin clay that just absorbs anything around it.
So it'll pull the stain out of the limestone.
Correct. So if you do get a stain in your marble or any stone, a poultice... Apply a wet poultice to the top of that, put a plastic bag over it, and 24 hours later, it'll have dried and pulled that.
Where do they get a poultice at? Where would you buy those?
I've seen poultice. I've got a favorite showroom at Master Wholesale in Seattle.
Okay. So they can get them from you if they want to, right?
They could. They could. But it is another, it's a Home Depot item too.
Okay. It is. Okay. All right. So they can get it locally then. Mm-hmm. All right. You know, it's funny because... You know, if you look at some of the time period buildings, like a lot of the government stone buildings, those were built out of limestone.
They are, and a lot of
but a lot of them are wearing away too. You know,
they are. When I lived in New York, I made a photographic study of terracotta, the glazed terracotta, you would see on the Smith Tower.
Yeah.
And those.
Is that what's on the Smith Tower here in Seattle?
That's all glazed architectural terracotta.
Wow. That must have taken one hell of a long time to install.
It does take a long time. And Gladding McBean is where they manufactured that down in California.
Okay.
But they're having to create one mold for any pieces that they make. And if there is a broken piece on a job site, they've got to shut it down and go back and
repair. I was just going to ask, on the Smith Tower, I'm sure they've had to repair that over the years. Do they have to go specialty mold those things again? Or
I wish they would. They have been figuring out more synthetic solutions.
Okay. So they're not sticking to the architectural integrity of the...
They aren't. It is more available, but it can be really wicked expensive.
I want you guys to hear, because you can hear Craig, but you can't see his face. He's grimacing. he's a true historian and artist, and I get it, man. It's kind of sad. A lot of these buildings, even in the Seattle area, they have so much history. And just to try to preserve them, whether they're residential houses or commercial buildings like the Smith Tower, you know.
There are. And there is a book called Seattle Architectural History. And it's just sad to go through that book where maybe it only came out in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And there's so few buildings that are left.
Yeah. From the original time.
From the original.
Yeah, they all got knocked down or rebuilt.
A lot of them have. Yeah. They've tried to do their best to at least maintain some facades around town, which was just featured in Pacific Northwest Magazine last Sunday. Yeah. But there are some little treasures to find dotted around town.
Okay. Well, if they ever knock them down, you can run over there and grab pieces of the building and you could... May have your own little museum of Seattle history.
I have to admit, my nerd side. Yeah, I did sneak down there at night a couple times.
Yeah, grab some. We might see you on the news in a police car, broken into a property. No, I'm just kidding.
I got a bunch of the Crystal Palace in my folks' backyard.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, let's go over to recommendations. So how do you, when you're looking at a job, because, you know, it's not just, hey, this is this tile, it matches this. You got colors, patterns, glazes, all the stuff you got to factor in, which, you know, for me as a client or anybody listening, that can get really overwhelming. So how do you guide a client with all of those different choices and the different types of glazes? Do you show them samples or what's your process there?
We're going to try to do, I'll show you samples in the showroom. But I'm always wanting to make sure that we're getting the most current lot. Because even in glazes, a second firing out of the same kiln can come out different.
Okay. So there's slight variations in the coloration.
Slight variations. Some tiles really are designed to have a lot of variation. Okay. Others, not so much. But I would end up trying to order samples for you right after the meeting and see if we can get the current lot.
Okay. And then you must... If it's a current lot, and because lot to lot can change, right?
Correct.
Even does it change in glazing too, or just
in
the
glazing?
Color?
It can a little bit, and sometimes does matter.
Okay.
But then natural stone, especially, you'll start on one side of the mountain and have a one color of stone, and as you dig deeper into the other, it can change considerably.
Okay. Just because of the stratification layer it came out of. Yeah, that makes total sense with the pressure and stuff. Okay, but one question I want to ask, too, before we end this segment is, are there different types of glazes, and do they bring out different kinds of, you know, it's like you talk about, people know about paint, right? They know about gloss, high gloss. They know about sheen, you know, that kind of thing. But how does that translate like into glazes for tile?
Some glazes are going to be designed to have more variation.
Okay.
And some, for example, greens have a lot of copper in them.
Okay.
And so that's one you really do want to pay attention to if you're using it in sort of an acidic environment, especially a pool or something. Okay. My strategy is there.
Does it eat away the glaze? Is that
it?
What you're
does saying? Eat away the glaze, but it can also get behind the glaze. So that copper glaze is almost living. So to test your glaze, cut a lemon in half and put it on top of the tile and let it sit for 24 hours.
Okay.
And if it's going to have any acid issues, you're going to know.
Got it.
And that includes chlorine, that same lemon.
So that'll tell you. Okay. But glaze also has a light reflectivity, too, to it, does it? So different glazes have different light reflectivity?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where the dark ones are going to absorb more light.
Yeah.
The light ones... In fact, that those old arts and crafts kitchens were designed with white tile because they reflected the light better.
Yeah, and there wasn't a lot of light with that kind of architectural style. That makes sense, yeah. We come back. We're going to continue our discussion here with Craig Nordberg. He's the founder of Norberry Tile, been around since 1997. Was that right? Okay. Give him a call, 206-343-9916. He covers all of Washington State, so wherever you're listening – you know, if the job's right, he'll go to it. So with that, I'm Pete. This is Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM and 770 KTTH.